an unexpected beginning to the program. And welcome back to the show. It's, you know, it's a Food Friday today. We're going down south, down home to the mouth-watering land of Dixie. The mere mention of Southern cooking, soul food, and barbecue sets, our stomachs rumbling. We have some fantastic folks in the studio with us today. Can give you a few pointers on whipping up some great stuff. Jasper Alexander is the chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs, named Best Southern and Soul Food in the region by Metroland for the last 12 years. He's a Culinary Institute of America grad and has worked in famous kitchens in New York and in Seattle. He also beat Bobby Flay at a chicken frying contest on national TV, and by golly, we will talk about that. Sean Custer is the chef and owner of Capital Q in Albany, a popular barbecue joint among locals, consistently voted best barbecue by Metroland, and also a provider of food for our fun drive. And oh, it's so good. Sean cooked his way through school and worked in small luxury hotels in New York before heading upstate to open up his takeout barbecue joint. Jasper and Sean, welcome to the show. Nice to have you guys here.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us online. You can go to our webpage, wamc.org/voxpop. And there are many other ways that you can get in touch with us. And I will have our producer come in and let you know about those in just a little bit. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer, always enjoys coming in and eating the food here on Food Friday. So, first, Jasper, tell us about this Bobby Flay beating. What happened?
It was about 7 years ago now. It's been a while. It's great that it still gets some play, so I appreciate it. But that show he had at the time was a show where he would come in and challenge people that are theoretically the best at what they do, and mm-hmm. and challenge them in their own home court to whatever it is they're supposed to be the best at. And in our case, it was fried chicken, and he came up and we did a few days of filming, and they sort of pitched a show like your expertise has got you this expose on the Food Network, and we're really there for you. And then they do the bait and switch at the end, and you know, the number one question I get it is it really play out like that? Is that really the way it works? And it is. I mean, there wasn't, you know, I've known Bobby for a long time. We worked for when I was in New York, I worked for some of the restaurants that he works for in terms of the backing, you know, So I even called him when the Food Network called me. I called him and I said, "Hey, Bobby, what's going on? This is for real. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, if anybody was going to know, it was going to be me. And it was a complete surprise. You know, out of the hat comes a, you know, sort of like a, you know, monkeys or, you know, clowns out of the car. You know, a whole other film crew, a whole other sound crew. Everybody comes out. Suddenly the crowd doubles and off you go.
Well, what did you do? Why was your fried chicken better?
Subjectively, cooking's pretty simple when it comes down to it. It was better seasoned, better cooked, and had the right texture, had the right flavor, and that's really, when it comes to cooking, that's what it takes.
Do you have a secret recipe?
It is a secret recipe.
You will not tell us why it was better.
It was better because I did it. That's why it was better.
All right, confidence. That's good.
He had a little technical difficulties that day. His he couldn't get a handle on the fryers that they brought in. They were,
Did you sabotage?
No, absolutely not.
No, you didn't pull a Tonya Harding on him in any way.
No. Good, he was not the Nancy Kerrigan of our day.
Fair enough.
He had the upper hand. He was planning all weekend for it. So the way it was pitched to me that day is, you know, we're going to do a party for your friends and family at the track. Let's go get together. And I was out of chicken, so, you know, I had to go back to the restaurant, send some people back to the restaurant and get fresh chicken and bring it back, because we had already served and everybody had eaten all the chicken that I had brought originally. And the fryers were they weren't the fryers that we deal with normally. They were basically like almost like a camping fryer. I mean, they were, you know, 20-pound propane tanks and super thin pans that go on top of this big open burner, and they were, you know, hard to regulate, you know, but they were equally hard to regulate for me as they were for him, you know, so.
Yeah.
It was about as level as you can get.
And so when you talk to him now, you can still hold it over his head, yeah?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Yeah. We're talking to Jasper Alexander, chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant. Sean Custer is here, the chef and owner of Capital Q in Albany, maker of some amazing barbecue. Sean, what's the secret to great barbecue?
Good smoke.
Come on, a little closer to the microphone.
Good smoke.
What do you mean by good smoke? Good wood?
Oh, well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Basically, one of the things that really helps our food along is our location, is the old Meister's Market, which was a German butcher shop for 75 years.
A great
place. Albany landmark. And when I came across this place, it had been empty for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I walk in and I see this smoker here and I'm like, oh my God, this is the place.
Yeah.
And it's off the side of a side road, and a lot of people thought I was nuts for picking this location because I had to put a lot of work into the building. And but it paid off because you just can't get the same results out of a modern stainless steel smoker as you can just like old brick smokehouse.
All right. So when you are making barbecued pork, is there a time? In other words, you see a lot of these shows and they go hours and hours and hours and hours. Does it take a long time to get it right?
Yeah. It took me about 20 years.
No. I mean, how many hours do you need to get it?
We cook perfect. Our pork butts cook for about 12 hours.
Yeah.
Our briskets go for 14 hours. And chickens and ribs a little bit less, but it's a labor of love and patience, and it takes time. Low and slow is the way to go with barbecue.
It smells so good in the studio. The number to call, by the way, if you have a question for these guys about barbecue, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. What do we bring today to eat?
We brought some spicy pecans. We brought some fried chicken, of course, because every time I go anywhere and I don't bring fried chicken, I get grilled for why I didn't bring the fried chicken. So we just skipped right over that.
All right, you got fried chicken.
And grits and pimento cheese as well. That's the secret dark horse there.
All right, so tell us about, we talked briefly about grits, and I got to tell you, I grew up in Albany area. I never had my mama never made grits.
Corn from grits.
So why don't you tell us what grits are?
Grits gonna have a bad rap, north of the Mason-Dixon line, really. But grits are stone ground corn in its simplest thing. And there's basically two big varieties of grits. You can either have your stone ground grits, which is the whole corn dried, ground between two stones and a big wheel. And nothing else is done to it. And those are a fresh product. You got to keep them in the freezer if you're not going to use them very quickly because they will go bad. You cook them in either water or milk, I think, is a great thing to cook them.
Boil?
They're super versatile. You boil them. So you bring up either whatever your liquid is, your water, your milk, your cream. You can put aromatics in there if you want to, garlic, rosemary, anything that you like. Bring that up to a simmer. You add your grits basic ratio for the dried grit product to the liquid is about 4-1. Mm-hmm. It's a great place to start if you want a little bit of creamier. You can add some more liquid if you want a little drier. You want to, a lot of people around here, polenta is not really the same thing as grits. It's a whole different variety of corn, but in essence, they're fairly similar things. Up here where people, I get a lot in the restaurant. Oh, I don't like grits. It's like, well, do you like polenta? Oh, I love polenta. I'm like, well, then you're going to be pretty close. You're already halfway there to liking grits.
So there's a bad rap, and maybe because some grits are not well prepared.
Well, I think part of the reason up here is that most people are exposed to instant grits, and instant grits are. They take the stone ground corn, they cook them, they dry them back out, they regrind them, and then you just rehydrate them for, that decreases the amount of cooking time, exponentially. I mean, a good grit, you can cook like polenta, the longer you cook the grits, really the better they get. You can cook them for, minimum for a stone ground grit, 30, 45 minutes is minimum, on up to a couple hours.
Most people just don't have time for that.
No, but you can, but it's kind of a passive thing. I mean, if you want really creamy grits, I mean, there's some truth to the fact that the more you whisk them and the more you agitate them, the creamier they'll get. But, you can put them down if you get a good thick bottom pan, either cast iron or something with a good heavy bottom. You can put them on real low, and they're pretty passive. You can just let them go in the background every time you walk around, give them a stir, and they'll be fine.
And you serve those at Hattie's?
We do. We have them for brunch, every brunch. We do brunch on Saturdays and Sunday. Oh, yeah, in my restaurant they are.
Yeah.
But, people come to us for those sorts of things. So, I mean, that's why I don't think if your average restaurant put grits on the menu. But like I said, I mean, there's plenty of restaurants that serve polenta around here, and they're pretty close.
So you also brought cheese. And what was the cheese?
Pimento cheese.
What is that?
Pimento cheese. Pimento cheese is the peanut butter of the South. So this is like...
I thought peanut butter was the peanut butter of the South.
No. Pimento cheese is the peanut butter of the South. Okay. Peanut butter is a whole different thing.
All right.
So this pimento cheese is when I was growing up, if you came in from outside after playing after school, your mom would slap a piece of pimento cheese between a folded over piece of white bread and send you back out the door. I mean, that was your afternoon snack. It's good on anything, from a spoon to a piece of celery. It's also something I've been trying to sort of get popularized up here in any way I can. I serve it any way I can. I've tried it in dozens of different ways at the restaurant, at both the Chicken Shack and the downtown restaurant. And it's a tough sell up here, but I haven't given up the faith.
Why is it a tough sell?
I think people in the North, they don't understand the pimento cheese.
Well, show me. I mean, you said you could put it on celery and on a piece of bread.
Absolutely.
So is it
So it's basically a cheese spread. So, you know, obviously, as with anything, you got to have a quality product. So we make this with Cabot extra sharp white cheddar.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's grated onion, pimentos, pimentos, which is a type of a red pepper, and salt and pepper and mayonnaise. And that's it. You know, it's very simple. But so it's like a cheese spread. And it's delicious.
This is my favorite show to do in the entire world, and this is the reason why. Sean, what did you bring?
Well, let's see. I have a variety of pulled pork. So we have three different kinds, the North Carolina, South Carolina, and a Kansas City style.
All right. Now, give us the subtle differences between the three.
Well, by far the most popular is what we call the Okey, which is our Kansas City style sauce. But I'm from Oklahoma, so therefore it's an Okey sauce.
All right.
And it's your traditional molasses-based and tomato barbecue sauce, what you think of as a normal barbecue sauce. I've always preferred the Carolina-style barbecue sauce, which is a vinegar-based sauce. It's usually a spicy vinegar.
So no molasses at all?
No. It's got some sugar in it, so you have like a sweet and sour thing going on. Generally spicy, with just like some red pepper flakes, salt, pepper, thyme. It's a nice tart sauce that really cuts through the richness of the roast pork, okay, because pork can be, pretty rich sometimes, and so this cuts right through there. The South Carolina, basically the difference, there's like, you have like the coastal North Carolina style sauce, which has just vinegar and sugar and spices.
Okay.
And as you move west, they put more and more tomato in it.
Ah.
So Western North Carolina style sauce is different than Eastern North Carolina style sauce. South Carolina style sauce is the vinegar sauce with mustard. It's my favorite, and I think it's the best one. People come in and they ask, okay, well, which one's the best? Well, personally, my favorite's the South Carolina, but then again, it's the least popular.
Now, why do you think that is?
Just because it's so different. Because, like, the reaction you just had, you're like, mustard?
Well, I mean, that's fine. It sounds fine with me.
It's awesome.
All right. Well, this is very exciting. This is a great spot to take a break. We'll start throwing the food out here. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer, just walked in. That means it's time to eat and to take your calls. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Mr. Zach, let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
The Texas sun is blazing, and I need a place to rest my weary bones. Whatever got me this far has long since left me out here all alone. And now it sure is a long walk back to San Antonio.
Support for WAMT comes from Cafe Capriccio. Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grant Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional consultations to homeowners and contractors. CurtisLumber.com. Rare Earth Wine Bar on the Circle, Glens Falls, New York. Now open, specializing in pairing food and wines from around the world. Rare Earth Wine Bar on Facebook. And the Tang Teacher Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080.
Yeah, okay. We're eating fried chicken now. This is really my favorite show of all time. Jasper Alexander is here. He brought the fried chicken. Sean Custer is here. Jasper is with Hattie's Restaurant and Sean Custer of Capital Q in Albany. And they have brought some Southern cooking and some barbecue here. And we started out with fried chicken. And this is the award-winning Jasper Alexander. I personally beat Bobby Flay fried chicken. And man, it's good.
Good, 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 good. I'm glad you're liking it, Ray.
So you won't tell us your secret?
I can't tell you the secret. We do have, the secret will be coming out. I just got a book deal a little while ago. We got a book coming out probably in the spring. And I don't think the publisher would let me get away with not putting the recipe in there. It is in Bobby Flay's recipe. It's really, I mean, like any good cooking, though, it's picking the right chicken, taking care of it, seasoning it properly, frying it in clean oil. I mean, it's cooking is a matter of taking care of the basic steps and not dropping the ball on those basic steps. That's really the secret.
Are you particular about your oil?
We are. We are very particular.
So what makes a good oil for you?
for us, it's got to have, obviously, you know, there's a myriad of oils you can cook in. Most frying oils, you know, we buy it in these big 35-pound jugs, and they range in price from, you know, $20 on the low end to $50 on the high end, and we're much, much closer to that $50 range.
And you really get what you pay for?
You really get what you pay for, and especially in terms of the length of time that it lasts. The other thing is keeping it clean. You know, a lot of fryers, your most basic economical fryer doesn't have any sort of filtering system in whatsoever. If you're lucky, the cooks are putting it through this sort of old-school coffee filter type of apparatus that strains the stuff out. But that, what we have is this mechanical filter that draws the oil through this it's a powder that sort of coagulates all the particulates and takes out some of the flavor, some of the negative flavors that the oil picks up over time, cleans it, really strains the oil out, and we filter 4 or 5 times a day. So it's just you got to take care of the oil, and you got to buy good oil, and you got to fry at the proper temperature too. That's key.
Well, the amazing thing about this fried chicken is it's not greasy.
No,
it's not greasy at all.
And that's a product of good oil and frying at the right temperature. I mean, that's how you get that. And that's why fried chicken is really tough to do at home. There's some ways you can make it easier, but the key is keeping the oil at a consistent temperature and keeping good quality oil. And it's tough to do on a stove. I mean, it's even, a Dutch oven helps. The big cast iron pot helps. An electric skillet works pretty well because you can actually set the temperature. But it's still difficult to manage, and it really works better when you submerge the whole thing. I mean, the cast iron fried chicken has a great ring to it and, sounds good, but it's difficult to manage, frying chicken in a big cast iron skillet. It's if you can do it, you got good skills, and it can be done.
What's your take on deep fried turkey?
Deep fried turkeys I like. They're really good. And the thing that's a little scary about deep fried turkey is this, that most people putting 10 gallons of very hot oil above a giant flame, is a little sketchy for most people, to say the least. And, I hear these horror stories of people, they drop their half frozen turkey in the oil, which is just a recipe to have a gigantic fire.
Sean's laughing.
And then they're telling me they're doing it in the garage. And I'm just like, you are insane. You need to pull that out.
You do out in the backyard,
away from trees. Make sure that the turkey is totally thawed, not wet. I mean, under no circumstances do water and hot oil mix.
Danger indeed. All right, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant, Sean Custer of Capital Q in Albany, and we have a plate full of food here. One of the problems with hosting Food Friday is that on a day like today where there's just a massive quantity of great food, I can't eat too much because I have to talk. But
that's right.
Tell you what, let's take a call,
and
then I'll have some of the more of the chicken. Jim in Gilderland, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering if either of these two gentlemen could comment on an interview I heard with Anthony Bourdain, who said, if you're interested in becoming a chef or working in a restaurant, you should spend – now, maybe this was an off-the-cuff remark where he said, spend time at the lowest end in the kitchen, either prep or washing dishes – and just see if you like the rhythm and the pressure and just the environment. Does that have any validity for you, or is it better to take the smartest way and go to culinary school and learn how to cook?
I think, it's a little bit of both. I mean, the reality of the restaurant world is it's a tough slog. I mean, it is hard work. It's an earn it daily business, I like to call it. So you have to be prepared to go in there and fight the good fight every day, and you have to be prepared to have a firm understanding that no job is that you are above no job, and that regardless of what you want to call yourself, you will spend an awfully lot of time washing dishes and scrubbing grout and cleaning grease traps and all those sort of lovely chores that we get to do. Culinary school can be a great shortcut, like anything. The better school you go to, the better chance you'll have at making an impact, and how much you apply yourself will also make a difference.
Is that just networking? You meet people when you're at culinary school, you tend to meet more of the people who are higher up in the biz?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And the other thing that is really important is working in the best possible places that you can work and that you can get yourself into. And if that means you go in and you work for free for a while, which is something I did for a long time, that's what you got to do. And eventually, slowly, you will make inroads into the career. But it's a tough route. No matter which route you choose, it's tough.
I think if you work in a bad place, you pick up bad habits.
Without question.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. But I definitely have to agree with the, I started off as a dishwasher at Stormy's Pizza Ranch in Watonga, Oklahoma, and eventually worked my way up to executive sous chef of the, you know, some top luxury hotels in Manhattan. Mm. And, you know, you should, you know, the dishwasher is definitely the hardest job in the restaurant. It's the dirtiest job, and it's just like I have all sorts of respect for a good dishwasher.
Yeah, it's a critical. It's a critical job too. I mean, you can't, you know, none of us would survive without a solid dishwasher.
No, absolutely. If people don't realize how key it is. And
what makes a good dishwasher? I mean, is there that big of a difference between a mediocre dishwasher and a great one?
They're as important as any other position in the kitchen, without question. Even more so. I mean, we've got a, you know, my guy at Hattie's, Julio, is fabulous, and we would suffer greatly without him. You know, he's just, he can do anything. His energy is unyielding. You know, he's a great guy.
Jim,
you know?
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551. That's the best piece of fried chicken I ever had. I'm not kidding you. All right, what else we have here on the plate? Jessica, you can we turn Jessica's mic on? Zach, thank you. What did you serve me while I was talking with these guys?
Well, I served you. Let's see what I gotta remember here. Oh, I served you collard greens.
Okay. No. Okay. I must admit, I gotta be honest with you. I've never had them.
Never had collard.
Never had them. No.
Oh, it's the healthiest thing in this room.
All right. So what
it's true. No, really, it is. And like I tell people, it's just like the collard greens are naturally chock full of vitamins and minerals, and I cook them up with enough vinegar to keep all of my customers worm free. So.
And you know what? This is really delicious.
These are delicious too.
Yeah,
they're great collard.
Is there what else is in them though? Is there like a meat of some kind in them?
I put in some roast pork. Basically, it's a very simple recipe. Onions, garlic, roast pork, the collard greens, salt, pepper, and vinegar, and cider vinegar, and sugar.
Wow, it sounds so easy.
It is easy, and then about 3 hours of cooking.
Yep.
But what's funny is I remember years ago my salesman from the produce company told me that that us and Jasper were the only people in the Capital Region who were ordering collard greens.
You're kidding me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we go through. I mean,
we use a ton of them.
Yeah, cases, and cases a week, and so much. I mean, if on the rare chance that you know. We get shorted. I'm sure if I'm getting shorted, Sean's getting shorted. You know, I'll go into Price Chopper, which does sell collard greens, and you know, I've often bought them out, and usually the produce managers chase me out of the store, you know, complaining that I'm buying all those collard greens. You know,
so the recipe that you use, Jasper, how does that differ to
it's
what?
Virtually the same, with the exception of we don't have any pork in ours. You know, Miss Hattie always had them as a vegetarian option and didn't put any pork in there. So because of the type of restaurant that Hattie's is, you know, we've kept pretty true to the script when we have a script to go on. And that collard greens would be one of those things. So it's the same, you know, cider vinegar, sugar, salt and pepper, onions. I mean, it's virtually the same.
All right, we're two for two. The chicken, the collard greens, amazing. Let's go back to the phones and we'll try some other things here. Let's go to Robert in Oswego. Robert, you're on.
Hi, guys. I was wondering if you had a herb or spice or any ingredient that you think more home cooks should get more familiar with.
Okay.
Salt and pepper.
That's a great point. I think the biggest difference between sort of restaurant quality food per se and the home cooked food is the amount of salt and pepper we put in it. And, you know, salt is something that really brings out all the nuances of whatever the food is that you're cooking. So seasoning, you know, in the restaurant world, you know, we say season aggressively, you know, and I think that's something that most home cooks are a little shy on the salt, especially. Pepper is actually, you know, more of a spice, adds something to the dish, but salt will really just enhance everything. And you can test it by starting with no salt and just keep adding a little bit of salt, you know, and until you think it's too salty, and sort of watch the flavor of whatever you've cooked change as you move along the path.
Can barbecue be too spicy? I mean, I like spicy food. I mean, when do you know, oh gosh, this is just dangerous?
Well, when it burns your mouth on the first bite, you know, generally, you know, if you break into a sweat halfway through your sandwich, okay, that's just right.
Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, I like to aggressively season things. I'm not a big fan of bland food.
Yeah.
And like my mother, she's Irish, and she always complained that everything I cooked was way too spicy.
Yeah.
She wouldn't even eat the gravy for my mashed potatoes because it had black pepper in it. And that, to Irish people, that's spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, and it's just people come in, they ask, okay, well, is it spicy? Like, well, spice is kind of subjective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, what's spicy to one person is, you know, the other person is dumping a bunch of Tabasco on top of it. So it's all personal.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hey, Robert, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Who made the sweet potatoes?
Those would be the maple mash sweet potatoes.
Okay, can you tell us, or is it a secret? What's in them?
Sweet potatoes, maple syrup, butter. Salt and pepper.
Amazing.
Again, back to the salt and pepper. It's like most food, good food, is very, very simple. And you want the food to speak for itself. And basically the salt and the pepper just enhance the natural flavors without masking it too much. You people start covering things up with, like, you start throwing in some cumin or, you know, thyme. Or if you overload any spice, that takes away from the dish.
Well,
it's like when it comes to ribs, I prefer my ribs like Memphis style ribs, which are dry rubbed, served without sauce, because I want to taste the meat, the smoke, and the seasoning. The sauce is a nice condiment to go on the side, but it's to enhance the rib, but not to cover it up.
So Kansas City style has more sauce. Memphis style is a dry rub.
Absolutely. That's the difference.
The things I learned on this program. Yeah. And Jessica, I mean, have we not hit the jackpot here today?
We have hit the jackpot.
This is amazing. Let's do a three-hour show. We'll get a couple of six-packs, and then we'll have a good time.
Now we got to get a grill in here.
So now we have like two different kinds of grits here. We have Jasper's creamy grits, and then we have our cheddar jalapeno grits fries.
Okay, so this is, that looks like sort of a mashed potato is grits, and I've never had them. All right, here we go.
Yum, yum.
Yum, yum. Yum, yum. The consistency sort of reminds me a little bit of a more firm cream of wheat.
Yeah, it's a little porridge-like, and you can... You can do, I mean, you know, Sean's got the fried grits, which is, you know, we do some similar things. And, you know, it really, the difference out of the gate is just they're cooked with less moisture so that they set up nicely. So he, you know, I'm sure he, you know, put these in the fridge overnight, then cut them up, breaded them with something, and then refries them. And
this is this?
That is that.
That would look like a crouton to the uninitiated like myself. All right, let's try it. I'm going to crunch it. Mmm. Okay, back to the phones we go. I must eat some more. Janie in New Milford, Connecticut, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there, Ray.
Hello.
Thanks so much. This is just great. Love the new programming, and I can't think of a better way to spend being in the polar vortex.
Yeah, I've had enough of the polar vortex myself.
Southern cooking going
on. All right.
That's right.
My question is back to the fried chicken, you guys, the fried chicken king. What kind of oil? Canola? Peanut? What's the best? I know best quality, but best quality what?
Best quality what? Good question. That really, you know, there's no direct answer. What we use at the restaurant is a mixture of corn and canola. Corn and canola. And the reason I do that is because they're both, you want something fairly neutral in flavor. All corn oil would have a little bit too much flavor.
Yeah.
You also need something that has a high smoking point and has that's a good sturdy stout oil that can take the abuse that frying chicken is going to give it.
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of things that break down oil, and fried chicken has just about all of them. So moisture, salt, flour, all these things all start to break down the oil. So you could easily use a canola oil or a vegetable oil, you know, off the shelf. You know, it's just going to take you a lot of it. You could also go to a bigger box store and get, you know, a larger jug of it.
Yeah.
And you can save it, you know, for a while. If you're deep frying things a lot, you know, you can keep it around for a little while. You'd want to keep it refrigerated if you're going to keep it for a longer period of time, just so it doesn't go rancid on you. You want to do for our fried chicken, we do a mixture of corn and canola, and it works really well. The corn gives it a little bit of flavor. Peanut oil is great. It's rather expensive. You also have allergy issues, which is why we don't use it in a restaurant. You
Probably.
Know, pretty much most restaurants now are shying away from having any peanuts anywhere near the place.
Unfortunately.
Right,
you
know. Right.
But there's some places that use exclusively peanut oil. So
as long as they tell you,
as
it's
long
okay.
as they tell
as long
you,
as they tell you, yeah.
Janie, whatever he does, you have to do the same thing because literally the best piece of chicken I ever had, it's gone.
my best advice on home frying chicken. My mother had no Southern blood in her, but she made the best damn fried chicken. We had this big old electric fry pan.
Yep.
I don't know that they even exist anymore.
No, they do, and it's a great choice because, like I said, you can set
the
temperature.
Control the heat.
Exactly. And the other. You know, as long as it's big enough. The other big issue with chicken is the recoup and temperature. You know, you want to, you know, with any cooking, in any kind of oil, be it deep frying, pan frying, shallow frying, sautéing, whatever, the you know, one of the keys is to not overcrowd your pan and to make sure that you keep a consistent temperature. And so if you, you know, have a little 12 by 12 electric skillet and you put in two whole chickens smashed in there all at once, you're going to drop the temperature of that oil so much that you're going to start to have, you know, an oily product.
Makes
so,
sense.
Yeah. So the key is to not overload your pan.
Now, I have a
great
question.
Great advice.
All right, Sean,
so
you have a question?
I have a question for Jasper. I mean, because this is superlative fried chicken. Do you use an open fryer or do you use a pressure fryer?
Open fryer.
Because I know, like, a lot of places, like, you know, that will not be named, use pressure fryers, which is a great way to
they're great.
It makes a nice moist product.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at them before to buy them, and they just can't handle the volume that we do.
Yeah.
They're expensive. The whole idea of a pressure fryer just, you know, honestly scares the bejesus out of me.
Me too.
You know, I think you can say that on the radio. Yeah, so far,
bejesus?
You guys have been very good.
That,
yeah, that's all right. It's fine. It's an ecumenical audience. We're good.
There we go. We use an open pot fryer.
So boiling oil under pressure, fryer is the most dangerous thing in your kitchen anyway.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, Sean, let's try some of this pulled pork. What do we got here? Which brand is this? So the
Well, I've got three different varieties. I don't know which one Jessica gave you. That looks to be the North Carolina style.
All right, so this is vinegar and a little sugar.
Vinegar, sugar, and some tomato. Well, ketchup, basically.
Oh, boy.
It's nice and tart, and basically, it's we have the coleslaw over here, which is a traditional accompaniment for the Carolina style pulled porks. And like I always tell people in the store, if they order a sandwich without the coleslaw on it, I'm like, hey, it's not Carolina style without the slaw on it. So
can
we
I tell
God
you something?
Intended.
It's a fact. You know, in radio, you have to dig yourself out at 5 o'clock in the morning in a snowstorm and come to work, and you have to work in sometimes bad conditions. It's not a tough job, but sometimes you have to go when other people are staying home. This is why we work.
Makes it worth
this
it.
This is really amazing. And if you want to get in and ask these guys some questions, we'd love it. Jasper Alexander is here from Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. Sean Custer, chef and owner of Capital Q in Albany. And we'll get back to your calls coming up in a moment. You're listening to Vox Pop on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Terrapin Restaurant, Rhinebeck, celebrating 15 years of new American cuisine, showcasing the seasonal bounty of the Hudson Valley, terrapinrestaurant.com. Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, New York, an independent college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12, focusing on the individual learner, oakwoodfriends.org. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. And Edward Jones, Kingston, New York. Risa Condi, Edward Jones Financial Advisor in Uptown Kingston. Making sense of investing.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander, co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. Sean Custer, chef and owner of Capital Q in Albany. And we have been eating some amazing food, sweet potatoes and collard greens. And I'm eating a different kind. This is darker red pulled pork. What is that, Sean?
That is the Okie style. That is the Kansas City style sauce. But like I said, I'm from Oklahoma, so it's an Okie sauce.
It works for me.
It's great barbecue.
That's the most popular. That's the go-to.
That's kind of your standard. You're sort of prototypical when people think about barbecue. That's it.
Exactly. That's why a lot of people, they walk up and say, okay, yeah, I want a pulled pork sandwich. Fine.
Done.
Okay, if there's a line behind them, I don't even ask, okay, which one do you want? It's like, boom, just give them the Okie style.
You know, I think the North Carolina sort of has a more subtle taste. It doesn't slam you over the head.
We're glad you're on our side, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I think it's definitely the Carolina-style sauces, they don't overpower the meat so much. I mean, granted, the Kansas City style, it complements the meat, but it is a huge flavor component.
Right. I wouldn't turn it down. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Gene in Del Mar, you're up.
Hi, I have a story about Hattie, and I just another question that will follow up after that.
Okay.
I went to Hattie's years ago when she was there, and she wasn't open at that point. It was too early in the day. We thought she was doing lunch. But she sat down and made us peanut butter sandwiches. So my question about Southern cooking is you never go to a Southern place and leave hungry.
No.
And is that just the nature of Southern cooking? Or, you know, it hasn't gone where you go to a fancy Southern place and it's very small portions. I mean, you never leave a Southern place hungry.
No, I think it's the nature of the restaurant. I think it's just the nature of the culture. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's a welcoming culture and it's a you know, very giving culture. And, you know, if, you know, we take Southern hospitality pretty seriously, and, you know, we treat it like you're coming into our, you know, house for dinner and we're not going to, you're a guest and we're not going to send you out of there hungry.
That's precisely what it is. It's all Southern hospitality.
So, I think that's really where it comes from. And, you know, Hattie certainly was like that. I mean, Hattie never let anybody go hungry, you know, regardless of whether or not they could pay or not. And, you know, we try to keep that in every way we can.
Thanks, Gene. You're gone. Well, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Tony in Canaan. You're up. Hello. Oh, you know, that button 4. Tony, are you there?
About grits?
Grits.
Sure. A couple of ours, friends of ours, she's from North Carolina, he's from Connecticut.
Yep.
When they got married, the family, of course, went down for the wedding. The brother wanted to try Southern cooking but didn't want to overcommit.
Uh-huh.
Went into a local breakfast joint and ordered a grit.
How'd that work out?
He was rather overwhelmed by the number of grits he found.
Yeah, that's good.
I'll leave you be on that one.
Hey, thanks
Take
a
care.
Lot, Gene.
Thank you very much.
Tony, we appreciate the call. Let's go to Denise in Saratoga. Denise, you're on.
Hi. I have some Hattie's chicken in my refrigerator right now.
Thank you.
I'd like to know, Jasper, how do you get the nice thick crust?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's kind of where the magic happens, and really it's bringing over the right. You know, we don't use buttermilk at Hattie's, so it's
but why?
Why? Because it. That was one of the big differences between, you know, Bobby Flay's chicken and my chicken, to ask you why we won. But it makes too thick of a crust, and that's why. So we are sort of seasoning our chicken, and then it's as we season it, it's got a little bit of water in there, and the amount of water we bring over with the chicken into the flour is sort of the way we make it. We make that crust just you know to have a nice bit of crumb to it, but not be too much. And you know, buttermilk will tend to carry too much flour over, makes a really thick crust, and can sometimes be too crunchy.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're very
Denise,
welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Sean Custer is chef and owner of Capital Q in Albany. Jasper Alexander, chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. And I got to tell you, the food we have had today is amazing. Still haven't had the cheese.
The pimento cheese?
We're gonna have to have some of that.
It's good for dessert, too. So
all right, man.
It's good for all meal periods.
All right, let's go to Jim in Warwick, Mass. Jim, you're up.
Hi, gentlemen. I would wonder if you have a recipe for coleslaw. It seems like most folks who provide that in restaurants anyway think of it as a side and treat it as such in a manner that it's not very good.
Well, sometimes it gets the short end of the stick, but for me, I mean, for barbecue, it's a key component, especially with the Carolina styles. It's not an afterthought. It's literally a key component because, like, for me, the perfect pulled pork sandwich is a marriage in between the meat, the slaw, the bun. It just all comes together. And basically, I mean, there's a couple of different styles of coleslaw dressing. You have the Southern style, which is essentially just like a vinegar and sugar based, mm-hmm. and more of a grated cabbage, and then you have like the Northern style, which is a mayonnaise based sauce. In Capital Q, we are sort of a mixture between the two. We use a little bit of mayonnaise, but not too much. And it's just a very simple recipe. It's cabbage, carrots, and red onions.
It's a very clean taste, and it's a very crisp, clean coleslaw.
Yeah, it's made fresh throughout the day.
I would agree. I mean, we do two different styles at Hattie's. I mean, in general, you know, one of the quick service restaurant has them both on the menu all the time. The other, the downtown restaurant, we have them more in the summertime. And one of them is a vinegar-based coleslaw with no mayonnaise whatsoever, and the other one is a Cajun coleslaw, which does have a mayonnaise base. And you know, one thing I find that helps is to salt your cabbage ahead of time a little bit with a little bit of salt and a little bit of vinegar and squeeze out, you know, sort of like an eggplant or at least some water, which will sometimes sort of take, you know, it'll make it too watery. And so
coleslaw can get too soggy if you don't do it right.
Let it break down a little bit, squeeze it out, and then make your coleslaw after that. You'll get a product that won't, you know, change on you as much. You know, really anyway, you can take coleslaw a million different ways. So, you know, if you don't want the mayonnaise, the vinegar is just fine, vinegar and sugar.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So, Sean, when you make a pulled pork sandwich, you put the coleslaw right on the top, on the sandwich.
Absolutely. I mean, for the Carolina styles, that's the way I recommend it. And if people, you know, decline the cabbage, I give them a hard time about it.
Oh, good. I'm glad. The customer's not always right, obviously.
Yeah, texturally, it's important, too.
No, I mean, it's not Carolina style if it doesn't have the coleslaw on it.
All right, let's go to Mark in Beckett, Mass. Mark, you're up.
Ah, thank you. Good morning, or good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
My question is, in the summertime, I really don't go out this time of year and barbecue, but I do ribs on the barbecue. And what I do is, you know, I dry rub them, let them set for 2-3 days, and then I cook them in the oven, low heat, for a few hours before I put them on the grill. Now, in the past, all I've used is the grease off the what comes out of the pan in the oven to season them. Is there something better to do?
Well, it all depends on what you like. Now, so much as, like, you want more of the drippings as opposed to the grease. A little bit of grease is good, but like I said, I prefer my ribs. I like the Memphis style, which is just the dry rub.
And what would be in a dry rub?
Basically, it's a combination of, like, you generally salt and brown sugar and other spices. I believe we have, like, 9 different ingredients in our rib rub. Whereas, like, our butt rub has about 18 different ingredients.
And you can say that on the radio, so you're fine.
And our brisket rub has 4 ingredients. Okay. It's the simplest rub, and we haven't even tasted the brisket yet, which we got over here.
I mean, what are you waiting for, man? What are you waiting for? All right, you keep talking. I'll get the brisket.
Here you go. But basically, sauce, it's, you know, whatever really works for you. I mean, a good rib doesn't need any sauce. A little bit of pan juice is fine. There was a place I used to go to out in Oklahoma that used to do not so much a barbecue sauce, but a barbecue gravy, where they would actually make roux using the grease from the ribs and then actually make a gravy out of that. So it had it had some of the flavor from the rub from the ribs. It had the smoke seasoning, and it carried over, and it was a really interesting product. And I really don't know if anybody else was making a barbecue gravy like that. Because they had
you
sauce
had me at
and
gravy.
They, and they had gravy. So that was a very interesting place.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, Mark, thank you for the call.
Hey, keep on cooking.
That's a good idea with the gravy, to put that on the side. Just let people pour it on?
It's fats are wonderful. I mean, I had a... back when Miss Albany Diner was still in operation, the chef down there, he contacted me, and he wanted some of my the brisket fat. And so I brought him. Well, that was it. He didn't know what he wanted it for, but he figured he'd do something with it. And I brought him down these, you know, basically, like, I was like, okay, you want some brisket fat? Fine. Okay, I took, you know, I came up with, like, 3 gallons, you know, after running one batch of brisket. So I'm like, okay, here you go. And we were talking and kicking around some ideas, and we were like, first thing that came to mind was just doing some home fries.
Oh, brilliant.
Sure.
And probably not as healthy as one might expect to.
If you're going to cook them in lard or bacon fat or Crisco or whatever, you're going to cook them in oil somehow.
You're preaching to the choir. I'm just saying. Hey, Mark, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. All right, here's the brisket. It's out.
There we go.
You got what, onions with this?
Those are the pickled red onions.
Oh.
Which are a nice little complement to the brisket that, you know, they're nice and tart and they offset the richness of the brisket.
Did I do something wrong? I put some of the sauce that you had on the side on it.
Is no, that's fine.
Okay.
Now, see, to me, I mean, every barbecue place has got pulled pork, got ribs. Brisket is really the benchmark of a good barbecue place because it's really hard to mess up pulled pork. Okay. It's pretty easy to cook ribs, but a good brisket, I mean, that's the benchmark by which you shall judge a barbecue place. Yep.
This is good. This is good. Thank you. Thank you to Alan and everyone at WAMC for letting me do this show. Ruth in Burnt Hills, you're next. Ruth.
Hi, folks. What a great show.
Thanks.
I just have a fun Hattie's Chicken Shack story. After my daughter was accepted into college, I bought Hattie's Chicken because they raved about it when they learned we were from Saratoga. So I brought the whole office Hattie's for lunch one day. Just after she started college, and they're still talking about it, and that was 5 years ago.
That's great.
Anytime I show up on campus, they say, where's
the chicken? Well, we're right there, so don't tell
you
to swing on through.
Well, they do on a regular basis, so thanks again.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for the call. This brisket's out of control. So pickled onions.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Just in vinegar and let them sit?
Vinegar, sugar, spices. You know, you cook up your brine, strain out the spices, pour it over the sliced onions, and wait for a week.
Yeah. Well, to show you...
We also have our I don't know if you got any of these. These are our homemade spicy half-sour garlic pickles.
Oh, you make these yourself?
We make pretty much everything but from scratch at the Q. Everything except for ketchup.
And pickling's super hot right now. I mean, people are, you know...
There's a renaissance in pickling.
Yeah,
which is
weird considering it's, you know, one of the oldest games going, you know, in cooking and food preservation in general. I mean, it's been around for thousands of years, and now, you know, suddenly in the new millennia, we're having a resurgence of, you know, all things pickled.
That's a great pickle.
Which is fun.
That's a very nice pickle.
Well, a lot of it has to do with, like, everybody's getting back for the whole, like, you know, from, you know, farm and garden to restaurant and stuff like that, and that whole movement. Okay, you don't get vegetables in the wintertime.
That's right.
So what do? You have your garden all summer long when you have way too many zucchinis to do anything with. And so what do? You pickle
them
up.
Preserve everything. You know, yeah. Stock your larder for winter.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I've ever had a pickled onion before, but it's really amazing.
Yeah, they're good.
And now how long do you cook the brisket? You know, to show you how sick my family can be, there are times in the dead of winter when I sit down, my kids sit down, and we watch some of these food shows and some of these barbecue shows in particular.
Yep.
And these guys in Kansas City, these competitors, they will cook these briskets for long periods of time. How long do you cook your brisket, Sean?
About 14 hours.
Really?
Yep. And I had a customer down at the plaza was asking me yesterday how long we cooked it because she wanted to make sure it was well done. She's like, give me an end piece. I want it well done. I'm like, ma'am, it's all well done. Well,
yeah.
There's some red there. And I'm like, well, ma'am, that's from the smoke.
It's very
well
done.
She was very concerned that it wasn't cooked all the way through. I was like, ma'am, it's cooked for 14 hours.
Yeah, there's no, there's
and it's like, it's either, you know, 14 hours in the smoke or 30 minutes in the microwave, you know.
Well,
and she was like, really? And I was like, no, ma'am.
You know, and there's all the collagen and the fat and these, you know, the nice thing about barbecue, and I mean, is that you know, it makes use of these lesser cuts of meat. I mean, everybody's, you know, we got a tenderloin and New York strips and all these things. And you know, most barbecue is made from cuts of meat that require this really long, lengthy process because it's got all this collagen and fat and all this, you know, it's the collagen breaking down that makes the stuff tender. And that just doesn't happen quickly. I
mean, and it's
it takes
so tender.
Hours and hours and hours and hours for that to happen.
Amazing. All right, let's get another call in here. And it's Ione in Kingston.
Oh, hi. Yes, it's Ione in Kingston, and I'm actually from Saratoga. I grew up in Saratoga, and my grandmother and Hattie, my grandmother owned a place called the Spite and Dival, and she was a wonderful cook as well,
mm-hmm.
and a dear friend of Hattie's.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So Miss Hattie was a kind of an auntie to me, and when she had her old place on Congress Street, my grandmother would be playing the horses up the street, and she'd send me down to have dinner at Miss Patty's.
That's a great.
I always ordered steak. And,
why
and
not?
There's a little girl down here ordering steak, and she said, oh, yeah, that's Virginia's daughter. That's okay.
That's fantastic.
But the biscuits and the cobblers, there was a great war, the biscuit and probably a war between them. Or, you know, not exactly a war, but
a friendly rivalry.
Oh, that's great.
Right, you know
everybody,
that.
You know, that's, you know, biscuits and people take their biscuits and cobbler seriously, so you got to, you know. That's fun.
So I'd love to, I'm going to come by, and I haven't been by there yet. I'm in Kingston now, but I'm going to come up and taste your biscuits.
You'll have to,
Capital Q on the way, because it's, the brisket. It's very nice. Hey, thanks for the call. We're almost out of time here.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, well, while we're on steak and we have 30 seconds left, I fancy myself a pretty good barbecuer out on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way? Now, the way I've been doing it is I just sear it quickly and then cook it slow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that wrong?
Well, there's the big difference in between there's barbecuing and there's grilling.
A lot
of people confuse the two. Grilling is cooking over direct high heat. Barbecuing is cooking with low, slow, indirect heat.
Okay.
Grilling is awesome. There's nothing wrong with grilling. And basically, steaks, you want to go with a high direct heat, get a nice crust on the outside, sear it, get that flavor in there. The most important part is to let your steak rest. After you finish grilling it to whatever temperature you want, you pull it to the side and just let it sit
for how long?
About 5 to 7 minutes.
Really?
The meat relaxes. And if you cut it right away, the meat is tensed up, and it's going to squeeze all the juice. It's just going to bleed right out on your plate. If you let it rest for a few minutes, it's still cooking. After you take it off the fire, it's still cooking. And it calms down, the meat relaxes, it becomes more tender, and then when you cut it, the juice stays inside instead of flowing out on your plate.
Brilliant wisdom to end the program. Gentlemen, this is one of the high points of my entire life. Great to have you here. Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant. Sean Custer of Capital Q. Thanks, guys, for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in today. Thanks to Zach, the engineer. The calls were taken by Ryan, the intern. And thanks to our fine engineering department, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, who came and ate and will probably be doing a newscast if she hasn't fallen asleep. Thanks to everybody. We'll see you next week.